Dave is always here, right, Dave?
They're noticing Dave's awesome reporting and all the news stories he gets from PSC, so you're starting to have a following, Dave.
I am.
Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, and we're gathered here today on the 8th of April for our regular commission meeting on the 12th floor of the State Capitol Building. I call this meeting to order. We have a number of items on consent and on our regular agenda, but in terms of opening comments, we continue to move forward with the whole legislative process. The budget process is steadily proceeding as well. Our bill and for the commission came out of the appropriations yesterday, I believe, was with a strong due pass recommendation. The Senate or the House appropriations did remove both the pipeline and hazardous liquids program. Well, they kept that out. The Senate had removed it. They kept it out. And they also removed the rail safety program. And so now the bill goes to conference committee because there's differences between the two versions. The Senate did fund the rail safety program, and the House has chosen not to. And so we'll go to the conference committee and see how that all sorts out. I have to say I'm disappointed that they removed the program. I continue to think it's a really important piece of regulatory structure we need in the state to properly oversee this industry and the growth that's occurring here. I think that the program, as we presented it, was a modest investment and a good place to start. And I think it can and has the potential to make a real difference in the safety of the rail system and the efficiency of the rail system, both of which are vital to our economy. The railroads are the key transporter for both of our largest industries, ag and energy. And safe operations of the system is essential to our economy. So we'll keep making the pitch and seeing how it goes in the conference committee. I remain hopeful that as session proceeds and they get a clearer picture of what is and isn't going to be funded, that this one will rise to the top and ultimately be selected for funding in this next budget cycle. So that concludes my opening comments, and I'll kick it over to Commissioner Christman for anything that he would like to start with.
Well, since you took my thunder on the legislative report that I always like talking about, I will just point out the strong positive wishes that I think we probably all share for success for the UN University of North Dakota hockey team Thursday night and Saturday. So good luck to them.
Way to go. Sharing the mantle for the Fighting Sioux. I love it. I've been so wrapped up in other things, I've kind of forgot about the Frozen Four that occurs right this weekend in Boston, is it?
Thursday night.
Mary Kate's hometown.
My wife reminds me regularly.
You married up, Randy.
More ways than one.
Okay, Brian.
Well, I will be watching the game on Thursday night, UND versus Boston, and so maybe we'll get a side bet against Mary Kate being from that great neck. Just a couple things. I know everybody's excited about Safe Digging Month, April Safe Digging Month. Stacy sent out a press release from the PSC. Last night I had the chance to go up to Minot. They have 16 digger dinners around the state. And so one last night was in Minot, a mixture of contractors, of industry, talking about what's going on in the industry. And so it was a very good event. They had almost 300 people there. Ryan Schmaltz was there from North Dakota One Call, and he laid out a bunch of the new features that they're doing for how to do locates and call them in. So there's a side story there for our members of the media, but One Call has continued to refine their process so you can upload the maps, you can do little circles around exactly where you're going to excavate, so they can continue to do a better process on that. So I was very excited to be part of that. And the one thing that I've been talking a lot about, call before you dig, obviously, for the last 6 years, but I think I'm going to expand the message today, and I'll unveil it here. Call before you dig. Dig safely and remove your flags when you're done, because that was actually the discussion last night. Is we're doing such a good job with people calling in their locates. They're we're doing a good job of the construction part of it, but everybody's leaving their flags all over the state. And that's been some of the discussion downstairs, actually, in one of the bills. So we need to keep getting that message out there that once the excavation is complete, make sure you take the flags down. So we'll continue on that. I know that there's other events planned for 811 or called Safe Digging Month. Last week, Tuesday, I was down in St. Louis and was part of a technical committee in front of the FERC. Of course, Tony Clark, our former colleague, is there, as well as Colette Honorable, a former member of NARUC that we all know. And I think, Dave, you asked the question of what the goal was to go down there last time. And my goal when I went down there was to talk about how this the new CO2 rules would affect North Dakota, predominantly cost, reliability, and how it would take away states' rights. So I delivered that message on behalf of the commission. And I don't think it was a new message that they hadn't heard it before. It was just nice, I think, to get it reaffirmed from the Midwest. But my biggest takeaway of that technical conference was the FERC is interested in what is their jurisdiction, of course. And the big thing that became clear to me was how these market-to-market sales of energy could be affected on these new CO2 rules, where you might have to have what they call environmental dispatch, where you don't run something that burns coal and you're forced to run something that is a lot more expensive. And that goes directly in FERC's jurisdiction because it throws off the whole market-to-market sales of power and how that could affect North Dakota, how that could affect our investor owns, which rely a whole bunch on MISO and eventually Southwest Power Pools. So maybe we'll set a discussion of that with my colleagues, but I'm thinking that North Dakota may want to weigh in with the FERC directly, a formal filing, reinforcing those points. So that was my big takeaway on it. And my thoughts on the budget, I would agree with my colleague, Commissioner Fedorchuk, and everything she said. We put in a pretty heavy package what we were asking for. We asked for three positions to expand our role in pipeline safety with hazardous liquids program. We put in the rail package. We asked for a return of a weights and measures position, as well as an additional natural gas inspector for our current program and the public utility analyst. And the way the Senate approved the three new positions as well as the rail program. They didn't move the hazardous liquid program along. In the House yesterday, or at a committee, really it was just the one public utilities position. So it's kind of interesting how this plays out, but there's a lot of pressure out there to do things correctly, and you need people to do it. And I am disappointed as well, and I'm hopeful that the conference committee will see fit to put back in, I think for sure, my viewpoint, that natural gas position in the current jurisdiction we have, and continue the discussion on the hazardous liquid program because, we're talking about Safe Digging Month, but, the more people you have out there doing things, the less chance of having incidents take place. So we need to keep pushing that, but I will close my thoughts with this, that one thing I learned in the Marine Corps, that you play the hand you're dealt. If you only got 20 Marines and you're supposed to go do a job, you do the best job you can at those 20 Marines. And so whatever comes out of this legislative session, we'll play the hand that we're dealt and we'll keep working it. But now that we have a picture of what's coming out of the House, I suspect all three of us will use whatever avenues we have available to get a different picture as it comes out of conference. So that's my long thoughts.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. Building off of your, just real briefly, building off of your comments on the FERC workshop that you attended, I'll be leaving this afternoon for some meetings out in New York City set up by the American Gas Association. And they're, thank you, Kathy. They're meetings that are intended to facilitate discussion between regulators and the investment community. So the investment community can tell us what they're looking at in terms of utility and financing and these sorts of issues, which do find their way into the pocketbooks of consumers because consumers pay for the interest on the loans that the utility companies take for their projects. And then we'll have an opportunity to express some of the concerns that we have as regulators and what are our biggest issues. And the issue that Brian talked about in terms of EPA regulations is one of the top issues that I'll be announcing or talking about with these folks on Wall Street as a concern for us. It's a big question mark, and it has a potential to have significant impacts to both reliability and affordability of our electrical system nationwide. So that'll be bubbling up in those discussions as well. Okay, enough of the opening comments. We'll move on to a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. So moving on to the regular agenda, I have two items in my portfolio. Both of them are pipeline projects, and I think that for members of the media here, you have a news release that kind of outlines both of those projects that we'll be hopefully approving today. JF1, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Caliber Midstream Partners LP 6-inch NGL pipeline project, McKenzie County, citing application case number PU-14-689.
Second.
On August 15th, Caliber Midstream filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for this 4.4-mile, 6-inch natural gas liquids pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County, North Dakota. On November 6th, we deemed those applications complete and set a hearing for January 13th in Watford City. We held that hearing as scheduled. And, you know, had a good opportunity to visit with the company about this project. This was an interesting project. It was developed initially as a gathering line, as we're seeing so many of these pipelines are initially being built as gathering lines. And then the landowners in this project requested that all of the pipelines, there's four or five pipelines at one time going in, that they all be built at the same time. So they accommodated that landowner request, built this all these lines to get at one time, and then the contracts for the gas gathering line didn't materialize. So the company now then came to us for a request to convert that from a gas line gathering line to an NGL transmission line, and so that's what this project envisions. The project originates at Caliber's Haybuite gas plant and ties into an NGL pipeline owned by One Oak that's about four and a half miles away from there, and this is located 7 miles southeast of Alexander in McKenzie County. The construction was initiated in 2013 and completed in 2014, but has not been placed in service yet. The total anticipated cost for the project is $1.8 million. We had the hearing, went through the applications. There are no exclusion areas impacted by the project. The North Dakota State Historical Preservation Officer has concurred with a no significant sites impacted determination. There are two avoidance areas, one water body crossed by the route and one wetland crossed by the route, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has reviewed those and offered impact for how to do that. The water body will be crossed with horizontal drilling, which is the least impact approach for that. The project will be monitored 24 hours per day by operations staff at Caliber's Hay Creek gas plant, and they will be coordinating with local emergency managers on emergency response measures. So this is a another piece of the infrastructure puzzle. One of the conditions on our order is that Caliber will obtain a conditional use permit from McKenzie County prior to operating the project. So with that, I like I said, this is another piece of infrastructure that will be valuable to getting more trucks off the road and helping with the whole gas capture processing process. And I urge us to support this project today.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just want to add, you know, sometimes when we have these transitions from gathering lines to transmission lines, people can look at them rather suspiciously, like it was done intentionally to get around the scrutiny in advance of construction. But on the other hand, if we want people to do things in an orderly fashion, I kind of compare it to building a highway. If you're going to build the highway before there's all kinds of traffic tie-ups, you might get it built and find out that when the traffic intensifies, there's some approaches that need to be changed or something like that. You can't project everything out into the future perfectly. In this case, they worked with the landowners, which is what we encourage pipeline companies, energy transmission facilities to do, and the landowners, you know, recognizing the fact that there's going to be multiple pipelines involved with this project, wanted them to just do it all at once, and so they worked with them, and so doing kind of what we encourage them to do and planning a little farther out into the future, this was one of those where the projections didn't materialize quite perfectly, and they didn't get the gathering contracts, and now there's an effort to make use of the facility that's down there, and I think it's a good use. We not only need to gather the gas, we need to transmit it. This is a good use for their investment, and I think an example of someone working with the landowners early in advance, like we encourage them to do. So I think I at least try and come into every one of these transitions looking at them very cautiously to make sure that we don't develop a pattern where we encourage them to build as gathering and then change it. I think this is clearly a case where that is not the situation here. And the fact is they just planned in advance and need to make an alteration to the original plan. I think this is a good project.
Is there any further discussion?
One more thing. Since you brought up that whole transition issue, I want to, add a few comments to that, too, in terms of how that process has evolved. When these first came in, it was really somewhat, I would say, a little bit alarming to us to get our head around how is this happening and why are these lines being developed as gathering lines and then coming in for a permit after they're in the ground. But as we've gone through this and worked with the companies, I think that we, too, have developed a process that helps review these more effectively and thoroughly, and I think assure that, A, they weren't, you know, trying to skirt the law, which I agree with Randy, that's not what we're seeing. and secondly, that we're doing the best job we can to permit them after they have been developed. And the companies are also doing a better job of preparing for that. Many of them are doing the cultural and environmental studies ahead of time, even if they're building them as a gathering line. That's one of the key differences between a gathering and transmission is having to have those studies ahead of construction. And they're doing that in a number of cases ahead of time, preparing for the case, the event that they might transition them to a transmission line. So that's very positive. We're getting as-builts of the lines so we can confirm how the depth of construction, which is another key piece of a transmission line. And they're doing a better job of trying to deal with the avoidance areas ahead of time, in particular the distance, the setback from existing homes and businesses. So I think it's been a process that has evolved. I'm much more comfortable with it today than I was 2 years ago. And I think that we'll see more of these moving forward. It's just one of the realities of this industry in progress. And so I look forward to working with the companies on how we can continue to improve that process.
Is there any further discussion?
Just one clarification, not clarification, addition point. Julie set it up beautifully about the environmental siting, but I've always viewed the PSC siting as environmental siting. When a company decides to build a pipeline, they don't, whether it's a gathering line or a transmission line, the construction standards are defined very, very clearly in federal law. So as they build it at a certain size, which may be gathering by our definition for siting, the standards of construction are out there for all pipelines. The emergency response plans are in place. So we bring in our hearings is the environmental review. So there's no differences, really. There's whether they do a gathering or a transmission as far as what the construction rules are and what the oversight on emergency response plans is.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. My second item, I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Highland Crude LLC, Door Crude Oil Pipeline, McKinsey County, siting application case number PU-14-840.
Second.
On December 17th, Highland Crude filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for a 13-mile, 12-inch diameter crude oil pipeline and associated facilities in McKenzie County. The project will parallel and interconnect with Highland's existing Market Center pipeline previously sited in case number PU-13-136. That order was provided in October originally of last year. This project consists of approximately 13 miles of 12-inch crude oil pipeline and facilities in McKenzie County. The project will be designed, constructed, operated, and maintained in compliance with Code of Federal Regulations Title 49, Part 195 of Hazardous Liquids Pipeline Safety Regulations. This is what Brian was just referring to. The federal government sets the standards for the safety construction of these lines. This is not set by state law or state regulation. This is a federal oversight, and they also monitor these lines and in terms of their construction and operation to make sure that they're built to those standards. The maximum design flow rate of the project will be 100,000 barrels per day. Total anticipated cost of the project is approximately $10.5 million. This project, as I said, it increases the capacity of the Market Center pipeline from 65,000 to 100,000 barrels per day. That's the entire pipeline's capacity. This loop, which is just an extra line, it's not actually a loop, it's just a line built right side by side of the other line, that is being constructed entirely within the corridor of the existing line. So the company didn't have to have a hearing and everything for this project because we already did that for the first one. They are building it within the area that was already reviewed. So they just had to certify to us that this route does not is not sited within any exclusion areas, and it isn't. It is within six inhabited rural residences within 500 feet of the existing pipeline, and they have obtained waivers from all of those rural residence owners. The SHPO has concurred with no significant sites determined, and this project crosses the Yellowstone River, as does the original Market Center pipeline. And the Highlands Yellowstone, so in order to get the permit from the Corps for that crossing, they had to conduct a scour study required by the Corps of Engineers, and they estimate the scour depth of between 3 and 32 feet. So Highland has committed to boring beneath the Yellowstone River at a depth of not less than 50 feet below the riverbed. So this pipe will be buried well below the lowest level of the Yellowstone River, and they have received authorization from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for this crossing. So the pipeline will be – there's also block valves on that crossing as well for further protection and long-term operation, safe operation of the line in that area. The project will be monitored by Highlands Control Center, which also serves as an emergency call center, and that is operated 24 hours per day. Highland has an existing emergency response plan, which applies to this project, and they have signed a certification document relating to our order provisions. And I want to take a moment to talk a little bit about that. That's a document that is included in all of our orders. The company signed this, and it lists a whole bunch of different requirements and measures that the companies agree to abide by in the construction of the facility, whether it's a pipeline, a generation facility, or whatever it may be. It has a tree and shrub mitigation, so all the trees and shrubs are identified ahead of time, and they have to replace them on a two-to-one basis. And then there's a number of other reclamation requirements that the companies agree to. And I do want to highlight them because I don't think, A, the companies are getting necessarily credit for all the stuff that they're planning to do and agreeing to do on these transmission lines and the things that we cite. And I also think that there is a lot of talk and concern about the reclamation of the projects occurring in our state and whether or not there's enough being done to assure proper reclamation. So in our cases, some of the key things that the companies agree to do in terms of reclamation, they provide landowners, well, in long-term landowner relations, they provide the landowners and the commission with the name of a contact person for the life of the easement that they can contact if they have problems. That's a fairly new requirement we added, and it was in direct response to frustration that landowners were having with being able to get in touch with somebody from the company to deal with a problem. So hopefully that will be minimize those problems will be minimized in the future with this requirement because the companies will be letting them know who to contact long term, and they will be letting us know who they can contact long term for any issues that arise. The pipelines must be buried to a minimum of 48 inches. The topsoil must be stripped, preserved, and replaced after excavation is completed. The reclamation, fertilization, and reseeding must be done according to the Natural Resource Conservation Service recommendations, unless otherwise approved by the landowner. I talked about the tree and shrub plan that they agreed to, all the mitigation requirements of that. and they have to repair and replace all fences, gates, drain tile that's removed or damaged during the operation of the pipeline. There's other a number of other items listed in that in those requirements, but those are some of the big ones. And quite, more broadly, they're responsible for reclamation and maintenance of the pipeline, associated facilities and roadways for the life of the pipeline, and they must restore the areas affected by construction of the pipeline as close as possible to the condition it was in prior to construction. So all of those are conditions of the permit, and if, you know, in a worst-case scenario, if we found that a company wasn't abiding by those, we could ultimately pull the permit. It's not something we've had to do or even threatened to do, because usually when we hear about a problem, we contact the companies and they fix it. So that's how the process is intended to work. We're pretty serious about that here, and I think that, you know, on the lines that we have jurisdiction over, we've had good response both from the company and appreciation from the landowners on our reclamation approach to these projects. So that's a conclusion. That concludes my comments about this one. Actually, no, it doesn't. One more quick thing about this pipeline. This pipeline adds to that Market Center pipeline that I talked about earlier. It's a significant new pipeline system. It loops through the entire heart of the Bakken, and it has a lot of different transportation outlets for the crude out of state. It connects to the Enbridge pipeline, the Plains Bakken North, Double H pipe, and the Four Bears pipe. So four export pipelines, plus two rail facilities, the Colt Rail and the Savage Rail. So this is gathering this commodity from throughout the heart of the Bakken and reaching a lot of different outlets. So it's an important, really important piece of infrastructure for the Bakken area. And this is, I believe, the final piece of it that we have in front of us and have been looking at for the last probably 4 to 6 months.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I do have a question, I guess. We got a revised order not long before coming in, and I had been through the other one well before that, and it's fairly long. The only change that I really noticed was the third finding of fact where we point out that Highland had committed to some extra detail work wherever they get real close to the right-of-way line. Is that the only change,
that
or
is.
Am I missing some?
Nope, that was the only change.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. I'm sure everybody's happy that that's the last item on my agenda.
Jeez, look, they came just to see you, Commissioner.
Okay. I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 7 to surface coal mining permit ACPG-9701 held by the American Colloid Company to add 149.28 acres to this permit for the Page Mine and to update the appropriate sections of the permit to reflect the added areas.
Second.
On December 27th of 2010, American Colloid filed the application for revision number 7 to add 149.28 acres to this permit for the Page Leonardite Mine, which is the Leonardite Mine that's down in the very southwest corner of the state in Bowman County. The area being added to the permit is located a half mile north of the existing mine. American Colloid plans to remove topsoil and subsoil and begin overburden and Leonardite removal operations in June of this year. Construction of two sedimentation ponds is also planned to begin in June. Leonardite removal is expected to be completed from the area by 2022, and final reclamation is expected to be completed by 2024. Two new haul roads will be constructed within the area being added to the permit. Haulage of the Leonardite from the new mine area to the processing plant will be along a quarter-mile stretch of Township Road, and then 2 miles west along U.S. Highway 12. A road use permit to allow American Colloid and contractors to conduct Leonardite hauling was approved by Fishbine Township. And I would just point out that American Colloid does use regular semi-trucks and bottom dump trailers that are licensed, so no special permit is needed along Highway 12 there. American Colloid does use tarps to prevent Leonardite from spillage. With the added acreage, the total permit area will now be 656.72 acres. Mining and reclamation procedures will be similar to those presently approved in the permit. This revision was deemed a significant revision and subject to public notice requirements. American Colloid submitted affidavits of publication to the required newspapers. We notified the appropriate agencies, the affected landowners, and the advisory committee members of the revision application, and we received no objections or requests for informal conferences on this revision application. The Reclamation Division determined that the worst-case reclamation bond estimate for this permit area, including the area being added to this permit, is just over $875,000. American Colloid currently has on file a surety bond in the amount of almost $1.1 million, which is certainly adequate coverage at this time, and it includes the acreage added by this revision. The Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision and respectfully recommends that it be conditionally approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Continuing on the Leonardite theme, I move the Commission approve revision number 6 to surface coal mining permit number GRGR-0501 held by Leonardite Products LLC to delete 14.28 acres of undisturbed land from the permit. This project is the one up near Williston, which is, of course, is just southwest of Epping. On December 15th of last year, Leonardite Products filed the application for revision number 6 to delete 14.28 acres of undisturbed land from the permit. This land is being deleted from the permit to facilitate construction of an oil well drill pad by an independent third party. It should be noted that the tract being deleted from the permit was not scheduled to be mined anyway. Reclamation Division staff have inspected the acreage proposed for deletion to verify that the parcel has not been disturbed. No monetary bond adjustment is necessary as a result of this revision, so the Reclamation Division has completed its review of this revision application and respectfully recommends its approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Never heard Williston quite geographically listed that way, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that your wife will appreciate that.
I always like to get in a plug for Epping.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission execute a contract with Earthworm Excavating, LLC, in the amount of $200,000 for filling sinkholes caused by abandoned underground coal mines in western North Dakota.
Second.
This project involves the excavation and filling of sinkholes that have formed due to the collapse of abandoned underground coal mines. Of course, ones that were mined before the SMACRA laws went into effect. This sinkhole filling project will occur over both the 2015 and 2016 construction seasons, and the contract will have an end date of December 31st of 2016. The invitation for bids for this project set a maximum bid price of $200,000. The low bidder was determined by the contractor who will be able to fill the most sinkholes based on the total number of cubic yards of fill material specified in the bid. The public bid opening occurred on February 26th, and 6 bids were received. The low bid was received from Ross Smith, doing business as Earthworm Excavating, LLC of Tolna, North Dakota. A notice of intent to award a contract to Earthworm Excavating was issued on February 27th. None of the other bidders appealed the intent of award, and on March 10th, the contract was sent to Mr. Smith to execute. The signed contract has been returned, and liability insurance documents and other materials that were requested have been received. The contract is now ready for execution by the Commission. Staff recommends the Commission execute the contract.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And my last agenda item, RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-127, canceling roving grain buyer license number 3205, issued to Dakota Spirit Ag Energy LLC of Underwood, North Dakota, and ordering that all North Dakota roving grain buyer activities be discontinued effective March 30th of 2015.
Second.
Dakota Spirit obtained a roving grain buyer license in June of last year to procure grain inventories while constructing their ethanol facility at Spiritwood, North Dakota. On March 11th of this year, the commission adopted an order granting the request of Dakota Spirit to operate a 1,840,000 bushel warehouse at Spiritwood effective March 30th. So Dakota Spirit no longer needs the roving grain buyer license, and staff recommends their request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Okay. And I guess in honor of
Safe Digging Month,
you have a diverse blend of one call related items on your agenda today, Brian.
They're all one call, aren't they?
Yes, and all kind of a wide variety of issues.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to go BK1, then BK4, and then 2, 3. I think 1 and 4 are pretty closely related, and it just that's sometimes when they file them, they just file when they come up.
Yep, makes sense.
Okay, item BK1. I move the Commission issue a notice of rescheduled consolidated hearing in Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS13884, Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Company Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case GS13885, and finally Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. and Damage Prevention Enforcement Case GS14-230.
Second.
What today actually does is just issues the notice for the next hearing on these three cases. A little background. In October of 2014, the PSC advocacy staff filed formal complaints alleging violations of North Dakota One Call against Northern Excavating Company, which is a Jamestown corporation. The staff recommended fines for these three cases are for GS13884. Staff recommends a $5,000 fine. For case number GS13-885, staff recommends a $5,500 fine. And for case number GS14-230, staff recommends a $7,500 fine. So the total that staff is recommending when we have the hearing is $18,000 of fines for these three alleged violations. The background, all three of these dealing with MDU facilities that were hit in the city of Ross. All three of these deal with MDU's facilities were the facilities that were hit, gas distribution lines. And the dates are September of 2013, October of 2013, and April of 2014. A little more background, in November of 2014, the PSC found the complaints were prima facie. In December of last year, we issued the notice of hearing and consolidated the cases. And we have a public hearing scheduled June 30th, 2015, 8:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, in our Public Service Commission hearing room. We've had a lot of discussion between Northern Excavating and this commission. We've actually held the hearings for violations from reservation telephones infrastructure being hit, and that was one block of cases. And the reason we have this kind of mixture of cases is that the commission staff kept getting more violations coming in for Northern Excavating, and it was very hard to pick an endpoint to schedule the hearing. So we because they just kept coming in. And so what ended up happening is staff, and I think they did the right thing, they merged together all the RTC cases, and we did one block of hearings. And our goal was that afternoon to get into the MDU Northern Excavating cases, but we just simply ran out of time. So this motion and next motion are set, will complete all the cases that have been filed with Northern Excavating to this time, and they're all basically set up to run the date of June 30th at 8:30. this motion and the next motion are noticed to both start at the same time. So whenever we finish the first hearing, then we can roll right into the second hearing. So we will, hopefully we can complete in that day, and if not, we'll deal with that. But all this does today is really set the hearing date, and I laid out what the staff recommends for violations. We, of course, have the ability to raise that recommendation or decrease that recommendation.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Darrell. And going out of order, but going to item BK4, which is very similar, I move the commission issue a notice of rescheduled consolidated hearing in Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS13886, Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS14229, and finally Public Service Commission Northern Excavating Company Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU14-671.
Second.
In October of last year, the PSC received a complaint filed against Northern Excavating Company, and these complaints were also all three filed by MDU. In November of last year, the PSC found these complaints deemed prima facie. In December 17th of last year, we issued a notice of hearing for the consolidated cases scheduled for the hearing February 3rd of 2015. So these four cases here that are listed in the previous paragraph, actually one of those, case number PU14-134, was one of those from RTC that we pulled out of this block, and we heard it the first hearing that we did in February. So when this was initially filed, it was four cases. We pulled the one out, and this one today is for the remaining three cases, which were the first two, 13886 and 14229, MDU facilities, distribution, natural gas distribution lines, City of Ross, October of 2013 and May of 2014. The third one, PU14-671, actually is MDU facilities. It's a three-phase primary electricity line in the Apple Creek Road area of Bismarck, so I guess southeast of Bismarck, or as Commissioner Crispin would describe it, northwest of Lincoln. So it's once again, we'll be hearing on those three cases. Staff recommended fines for these three cases. The first one, GS13886, staff recommends $5,500 fine. The second case, number GS14-229, staff recommends $6,500 fine. And the third case, PU14-671, staff recommends a $7,500 fine, totaling staff recommended fines $19,500. So we've scheduled this, both of these hearings, for June 30th, 8:30 a.m. Central Time in our commission room, hearing room. And if you total up the staff recommended fines for both BK1 and BK4, $37,500. So it's by far the largest that staff has ever recommended. Once again, the commission has the ability to raise the fine to a max of $25,000 per violation or reduce it to zero. So we'll look at the facts of the hearing and make our decision accordingly.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2, I move the commission adopt the consent order in Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Landwehr Construction, case number GS14-727.
Second.
You know, before I get into the case, I just want to step out one second that, you know, thank Victor and Julie Prescott for all their work on these damage prevention cases. Pat's been doing a lot of work on these for many, many years. You know, last session we fought pretty hard to get an additional public utility analyst, and we got that. And I'll tell you that the reason we're getting caught up the way we are is because those additional people are helping us move the workflow through. So that goes back to, I think, our opening comments about how important it is to have the appropriate staff to do what we're supposed to do. So thank you. And everyone else does a great job, but I'll highlight you two today. So, the facts of this case, Landwehr Construction is a Minnesota corporation based in St. Cloud. The PSC received a one-call complaint by Xcel Energy. Our crack staff did their investigation and basically concluded that of June 30th, 2014, Landwehr personnel began an excavation defined in North Dakota Century Code at 6425 15th Street North in Fargo. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that a natural gas service line was damaged during the excavation. The amount of the damage was approximately $331. One customer lost services. Fortunately, no critical facilities such as hospitals and the clinics were affected by the incident. staff concluded there was no agreement between Landwehr and Xcel. It was not being made in time of urgency. And basically, staff concluded that the company Landwehr violated North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide an excavation notice at least 48 hours before beginning its excavation. The consent order today, the company Landwehr agrees to pay a fine of $1,500 to the commission, as well as to pay damages not to exceed the $331. So appreciate staff working this through. But this block of cases today, they're almost all dealing with natural gas facilities being hit. And every facility that's hit, there's risk involved. But these natural gas strikes, there's a higher risk. So last night I was up at that digger dinner. We just got to keep stay engaged in all this. But for this order today, everything is in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I want to, in case the company is listening, I want to applaud them for their straightforward approach on recognizing their fault and sending us a letter that clearly laid out how it all happened. And I've really appreciated that. It makes our work a lot easier. And I think it gives you confidence that they aren't going to be repeat offenders.
Absolutely. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And finally for me, item BK3, I move the commission adopt the consent order and Public Service Commission Keller Paving and Landscaping, Inc. Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number GS14-741.
Second.
In October of last year, the commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Enbridge Pipeline alleging that the Keller Paving and Landscaping violated North Dakota Century Code. Keller is a North Dakota corporation with principal offices in Minot, North Dakota. Enbridge, of course, is a Delaware corporation with its main office in Houston, but they've had a very, very large presence in North Dakota for many, many years. Our staff conducted an investigation and concluded that on May 25th, Keller personnel began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while attempting to free a track hole that was stuck in the mud at York, North Dakota. So when I first saw this case, it kind of jumped out at me as everyone seems to be a little different in these. Mm. And this one was very different, that staff concluded that the Keller personnel did not provide an excavation notice at least 48 hours in advance. No damages were caused to the Enbridge facility. But really this came down to is that the company was out there, Keller was out there trying to do some work with some grain cars and trying to move some things around. They got a backhoe stuck, and they basically used an excavator to get it out, and they didn't call one call. And so this one, when I reviewed it, and I think staff once again did a very good job, it was an interesting scenario because Enbridge's facilities weren't hit, but this backhoe, when it was stuck, and when the first machine was stuck and the second one is trying to get it out, they were very, very close to being on top of Enbridge's facilities. So Enbridge is obviously monitoring their facilities very, very close. And so I dug into a little bit that, maybe this one, it was one of those that was being done in time of emergency. And so, based on the law, which Ilana, where you at all the time, tells me to go back to, emergency means a sudden, unexpected occurrence involving a clear and imminent danger demanding immediate action to prevent, mitigate loss of, or damage to life, health, property, or essential public services. So I agree with staff's recommendation, and actually it's a consent order. But it was not an emergency to get the backhoe out at that time. I think that they certainly could have, called it in and given the circumstances, and Enbridge would have come out. In the end, it all worked itself out. But what this consent order basically does is that the company Keller agrees to pay a fine of $500 to the North Dakota PSC, which of course goes to the general fund. But I think it's just a good awareness out there that, pipeline accidents can happen because of so many reasons. You can have a third-party damage. You can have an operation maintenance not being done. Here someone's out there trying to do some work in an unrelated area operating right on top of Enbridge's facilities. All it takes is one of those backhoes to dig a little bit deeper, and you bust a 36-inch pipeline. I shouldn't say 36-inch. I don't know exactly how big the pipeline was in that area. But most of those Enbridge ones are pretty big. So I think the point I got out of this is I think our staff did a very good job. It opens up the realm of discussion of what is an emergency. We've never really dealt with that before, but I think this was not an emergency because, to me, the word imminent danger of life, I don't think that was imminent danger because of a stuck backhoe. But I will commend Enbridge because you know, it's clear that Enbridge is watching its facilities. Last meeting, we dismissed the case where Enbridge filed a complaint against someone moving a rock pile in the vicinity of their infrastructure, and they weren't digging above their pipeline, but they were working close to it. So I appreciate Enbridge's efforts to keep an eye on their facilities and encourage other companies to do that, because I'd much rather do many, many of these kind of cases than have to deal with a major spill of some kind by a third-party damage. So I think this is certainly in order, and once again, what I call this one? Initial document or something they've ever seen? So everything looks to be in order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just have a question on the emergency issue. What came to my mind was it was an emergency for them to get that backhoe out at that point. But if they have all their workers out there and they're in the process of doing something like that, can they get an emergency one-call ticket so that they aren't, you know, because that seems like it would be a disincentive to call if you can't get in the circumstance like that somebody out there fairly quickly and would have to send your staff home and wait 48 hours or up to 48 hours to actually get the locate.
Well, there's two things they could do. One is they could just do what they did and just do it with their own emergency, and then we make a determination on it. But that was, I agree with what you just said. If they call North Dakota One Call and explain the situation to them, I think North Dakota One Call can quickly talk to the people with facilities and get it out there, so it could become a six-hour turnaround instead of mm-hmm. I don't not believe, and I will double-check this with Ryan Schmaltz, I don't believe they can issue such a thing as an emergency one call. I think what they can do is they can expedite the locating process to where, mm-hmm. you know, if we would get the phone call, one of us would get it, and they'd explain the situation, we would quickly call the people involved with the facilities and get them out there. So I think, look, hindsight's always perfect. That's probably what they should have done.
Right.
But even in their letter, they being Keller, you know, they admitted they were mm-hmm. they weren't even thinking about it. They were just trying to work. So it didn't quite cross their mind. And I can get that. I can see they're out there working, and they wouldn't think about doing a locate ticket on getting a stuck machine out. But you start digging in an area with major pipelines, it's a lesson learned, and actually, now that this case is done, I will talk to Ryan Schmaltz, and now as they do their digger dinners, they always go through the previous year's incidents, and this will become, I'd like it to become one of the incidents they talk about, where this is people just doing their job, not thinking about it, but it clearly could have caused a major problem.
I was reading in the 4-point font on this one-call complaint form that they spoke. I believe this is what it says. It should be used for an eye test. They spoke with a Keller employee and urged them to call for an emergency locate request. However, they were ignored. So that's what made me think. I didn't realize there was such a thing as an emergency locate request, and maybe there isn't. But, yeah, if you hear something from Ryan on that, I'd be interested in knowing.
And I'll check the terminology because I don't know if it's called emergency locate request, but I'm sure there's a procedure if you call one call and explain to them what's going on, they're going to want to get somebody out.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I think you correctly point out that this is something that the one call board should be reviewing. Absolutely. For the next couple of years. It's, you know, probably late to start anything this session anymore, but as I looked at this too and looked at that law, you know, it's somewhat vague, and maybe that's the right way, so we can look at the cases, you know, and review them and just make a decision based on what we think is an emergency or not an emergency. But, you know, I can imagine a lot of things that, since the Keller company isn't here fighting this, I presume aren't the cases here, but, you know, if a piece of equipment is stuck in a railroad right-of-way, well, dare you leave that 2 days while trains are passing by when you don't know how wide of loads they might have or what, or if it's something that's continuing to sink, you know, if your $100,000 diesel engine in 10 or 12 hours is going to get below the water line, you know, is that an emergency or not? It may be something that the combination of facility owners as well as excavation contractors on the one call board need to explore a little bit more to see if there's a good rationale for providing more detail as to what constitutes an emergency.
Sure. It's funny because it's not funny. When I looked at the flip side of it, let's say that because of their operations, they would have damaged that pipeline and it started to leak. Mm. You go, but who would have been held accountable? It would have been Keller would have been held accountable.
Yeah. And you know, I think back often to years ago when during a legislative session, I seen some pictures from down by Wahpeton of farm equipment that was stuck in those fertile Red River Valley fields. And literally, tractors had sunk down to where the tops of the back tires were down at ground line, which would be certainly more than 4 feet. So there'd also be the potential if you see your equipment stuck above a pipeline, maybe it's the emergency to get it out of there before it sinks down far enough to damage the pipeline.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's a fuzzy area, and I'm sort of glad we got a case that doesn't have a death or a severe injury or even monetary damage to maybe get the ball rolling on seeing whether there's improvements and definitions that need to be made.
Well, and we,
and maybe we have just what it should be too.
Well, and we, the commission, this is a consent order, so the company agreed that they had some liability there. But if the company would have said no and requested a hearing, we would have had a hearing just in that fact that we'd had to decide one way or the other. So I do think it is good discussion to have now with the One Call Board about how they see it and use this as a training tool, because I'm sure it's happening other places.
Sure.
The one thing I really go back, I commend Enbridge again, they're watching their facilities. And that, to me, is really the good takeaway on this. They're seeing exactly what goes on, and that's what we want people to do, is keep an eye on their facilities.
Green.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio, Madam Chair.
Excellent. And that concludes our regular agenda. I will highlight a couple things on our calendar coming up. On Monday, the 13th, we have our first public input sessions on the MDU gas, natural gas service rate increase request. We will be having hearing or input sessions at 7 p.m. The public can attend at locations in Williston, Bismarck, Dickinson, Devils Lake, Minot, and Valley City. And then we'll be having an opportunity at 12 noon the next day for those who want to attend, and that time works better. Those will be at the same locations, Williston, Dickinson, Devils Lake, Minot, Bismarck Valley City. We did a news release on this, so the media should have all those locations. They're also listed on our website. On Wednesday the 15th of next week, we have a hearing in Wofford City on the Little Missouri Gas Plant expansion, another gas plant expansion. And on Friday, next Friday, the 17th, we have a formal hearing on the Hess North Dakota Pipeline projects. That's a crude oil line and an NGL line in McKenzie County that actually crosses the lake. So that will be an interesting hearing, and that will be held in Williston. And then that kind of brings us through April. In May, we start tackling ADPs, Advanced Determinations of Prudence, for some of our utilities. Both XL and MDU have ADPs in front of us for some renewable projects. One, a solar project in Minnesota, and the other is a wind farm in North Dakota. And then I want to highlight, again, in end of May, but this is something the media might want to put on your calendar, the Dakota Access Pipeline Project, which is that very large, up to 500 and some barrels per day pipeline that goes through the heart of the Bakken and out southeast North Dakota. We'll have three hearings. The first one will be held in Mandan. So for those of you who have never been able to attend one of our siting hearings, that would be a good one to attend, because it'll be, I'm sure, very in-depth, and there'll be quite a bit of public input, I think. Mandan, Thursday, May 28th at the Seven Seas, now Baymont Inn Hotel, starting at 8:30 a.m. And we'll have two more hearings held on that project throughout the month of June. So that highlights some of the work that's forthcoming for us. Do we have any questions from members of the audience?
I would like to just ask, when going back to the budget discussion, was there any talk about, in either Appropriations Committee or on either floor, about a contingency budget? So if things come in above a certain level, you would get some of those positions reinstated.
That was not discussed in either. Well, maybe a little bit in the Senate, but definitely was not brought up in the House that I heard, or was asked about. Maybe the two of you have heard something different.
No,
nothing at all.
Okay. Commissioner Christman, since you are the legislative liaison kind of here, or you've been in a legislative session, what are the chances that the PSC can get some of those things reinstated in conference committee from your experience?
Well, you know, these budgets, it's really early in the session yet to say what's going to happen by the end. There's going to be a lot of changes in the next few weeks. I am no longer there in the inner discussions as far as, having access to just where their budget is falling out based on their projected revenues and those sorts of things. So, you know, I don't have any key inside information or anything like that, except to say that really all the differences between the Senate version and the House version are certainly on the table, and some other things that probably aren't difference could potentially be brought in the mix too. So I think we just continue to make our case of the importance of the things that we requested going all the way back to last summer and fall when we put in our budget proposal, and provide them with all the information possible, and they're going to, weigh decisions based on the levels of importance that they see our requests as and compared to each other, as well as compared to the requests from other agencies, and I'm confident they'll come out with a good product, but I don't know, I don't have a prediction as to exactly what it'll be.
I would be remiss, since I've got your attention, how much leonardite is mined in North Dakota?
I don't know, but Jim might be able to give us a ballpark.
It varies from year, but probably from 50 to 75,000 tons.
Okay. What do you use leonardite for?
A lot of it's used for a soil amendment. There's some that goes into some actually drilling mud additives. It's mostly what's used there is offshore drilling and that and certain things. But it's high humic acid, and that can be used for other uses too in some manufacturing processes.
I think it's valuable, kind of primarily in sandier types of soil. As an additive.
Where's the start and finish? Where are these two pipeline projects, where do they start and end again? It says the names of the facility that was wondering about.
Yeah, I can show you the maps too if that would be helpful. But the Highland marketplace. So it starts, it's just south of Williston, in quite a ways south of Williston, by Door, and goes straight east to, it's about, maybe a few miles north and west of Alexander. And the other one is just a small little 4.5 mile lined south of Alexander. Again, I have that map if you want to see the visual.
There was those rescheduled hearings for the different northern excavation stuff. How did those other cases shake out from the other hearings before?
The commission in the previous cases dealing with reservation telephones facilities being damaged by northern excavating, the commission found them quote guilty in all but one of the cases, and I think the fine total was $9,500 in the previous cases of northern excavating, and those were all in the city of as well. Separate cases, so separate set of facts.
Do you know what the original fines were for all those? Or?
I believe the original fines recommended in those cases totaled $17,000. I'm looking at Victor. I think that's right, isn't it, Victor?
Slightly more, actually.
$9,000.
Okay. So $9,500, $9,000.
Plus an additional
55, so $22,500. We ended up levying fines of $9,000. The biggest difference with what the staff recommended in the previous case to what we ultimately settled in on was the staff, and it's the right thing to do, has an escalator built in. So if it's your first violation, let's say it's $500. If it's your second violation, it might be $1,000. And so the previous case, the commission basically in our work session decided that we would take the escalator out. And so that means that, you know, when, let's say the end fine would have had probably an escalator built in of, you know, $5,000-$6,000. By the time we took out those escalators, it dropped the fine down to the $9,000. So we based the rationale in the previous cases of what the damages were done, the facts around it, but left the escalator out. And if you look at the numbers that are proposed in the current batch of staff recommended fines, those have an escalator in there. So certainly not making any decisions, but that I'm sure will be a discussion point that we'll get to when the hearing is done, is how we're going to apply the escalator, if at all, in this current set of cases in front of us. Not speaking as myself.
That first set had a pretty tight time frame in which they occurred. And so for my own opinion on it, was that was the reason for not adding the escalator on each one, because it was, you know, almost a big violation as they went down the street.
And so even though they were in the city of Ross, they were separate incidences. It wasn't like they hit both a gas line and the telephone line at the same time. They were...
Well, the first batch was they had a construction project that went down the line and hit a bunch of RTC facilities. This batch that's in front of us now is also in Ross, dealing with their strikes on the natural gas lines, which I suspect are also located dealing with some of the construction projects they were doing that damaged the infrastructure lines. I would have to compare exactly the locate spots, but it's clear to say Northern Excavating was doing a lot of work in Ross, and they hit facilities. And the time frames are staggered. There's some September of 2013. There's some October of 2013. We have one. There is one that's in the city, the area of Bismarck, too. So there's that was part of our challenges of trying to figure out the end date of when to actually schedule these hearings, because the company requested hearings, and that's their right to do that.
Can we assume that they have not paid the first set of fines?
I would have to ask Victor on that. They have not. So one of the things that the first cases we did, the company has folded. And so, you know, they made it clear in the hearing that if we have things that we need to send to them, send it to the Vogel Law Firm. So I'm sure our staff is working that right now. So there's separate issues. You know, there's damages that they did that now they have to pay for because there's a judgment against them. There's money that they owe to the general fund because of the decision. And now perhaps we'll see how this plays out. But at some period of time, if they still have not paid their fines to the general fund, then the three of us will need to get together in a work session and decide if we're going to use our legal ability to go after those funds to recoup to the general fund.
When was that first hearing again for those other ones?
Oh, I cannot remember. Victor? Oh, February 3rd. Sure.
When was the first hearing, did you say?
Yeah,
February 3rd. Yeah, because we continued that one. February 3rd, 2015, that would be the first block of hearings. And that's where in the orders today, we continued it for some of the cases, and then the other ones were a new block. The goal was February 3rd to get through all of them, run out of time. So now the goal is to go through all these cases, remaining cases, June 30th, starting at 8:30. And basically we'll start in the morning and go till hopefully we're done. I think that's correct.
Any other questions?
May I just point out that I used to have microphone number 1. Now I've got microphone number 6. Is that a punishment of some sort?
6 is higher than 1, Dave.
Yeah.
Ah.
You've been elevated.
Yes.
We're not like license plates here. All right. Thank you very much for coming. We'll take a we'll reconvene at 11:20 for the admin portion of our meeting.